You're listening to Bible Prophecy Daily, a weekday podcast where Bible prophecy matters and matters greatly.
Okay, in part one of this short series, just two episodes, part one, part two, this is part two. In part one, I introduced and kind of set up the context to discussing this issue of who the restrainer is, which I believe I think the multiple lines of evidence point toward that it's Michael, the archangel that Paul has in mind when he's talking about this restrainer in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. And so this brings us to part two, where I'm going to get into some of the specific evidence itself. But let me just quickly recap here the context. So you have Paul introduces the topic of the restrainer in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 6 through 7. He introduces the topic of the restrainer just after his teaching on that two events have to happen before the day of the Lord. Quote, the rebellion, which is a particular discernible apostasy, comes, and the man of lawlessness, i.e. the Antichrist, is revealed, the son of destruction. These two events have to happen before the return of the Lord. And when the Antichrist is revealed, he will oppose and exalt himself, quote, above every so-called god or object of worship, and as a result, he takes a seat in God's temple, displaying himself as God. That's 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 4. And then a few verses later, Paul informs us that the Antichrist will not be working alone, as Satan will deceptively pull the Antichrist's strings. There's going to be a satanic possession in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 9 through 10. But at this present time, Paul teaches, at this present time, the Antichrist, Satan's revelation is restrained until the appointed time, quote, what holds him back, end quote. And that's 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 6. So Paul tells the Thessalonians there is no need to mention the restrainer's identity because, quote, surely you recall that I used to tell you these things while I was with you. And so you know what holds him back. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 5 through 6. And the reason Paul gives for the restraining ministry is based on God's sovereign purpose. Quote, so that he will be revealed in his own time, verse 6. And then he qualifies this by saying, quote, for the hidden power of lawlessness is already at work, verse 7. It's interesting, in a similar fashion, the Apostle John taught this already not yet spiritual or spirit embodiment sense of Antichrist. In 1 John 4:3, he writes, but every spirit that does not confess Jesus is from God, and this is the spirit of the Antichrist, which you heard is coming and now is already in the world. And then, finally, Paul then teaches that the revelation of the Antichrist will happen when the restrainer is taken out of the way. Okay, quote, however, the one who holds him back will do so until he is taken out of the way, and then the lawless one will be revealed. That's in verses 7 through 8. Okay, so given this context, right? We now turn to the question of the identity of the restrainer. And as I mentioned in episode 34, the last episode, there are various theories, candidates have been propounded, such as the Holy Spirit, God the Father, the universal church, the gospel, government, the preaching of the gospel. These have been certain candidates have been offered to say, "Hey, this is the restrainer," and then there's some interpreters who just have kind of thrown up their hands, right, and just claim an impasse to this restrainer quest. But as I mentioned in the previous episode, in the year 2000, a groundbreaking article was published by Thessalonian scholar Colin Nickel, entitled "Michael, the Restrainer Removed," 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 6 through 7. And that was published in the Journal of Theological Studies, volume 51, the year 2000, on pages 27 to 53. And I highly recommend reading that. So after Colin Nickel published this article, a few years later, he included this article in his important work on the Thessalonian epistles. It was a monograph, which was his dissertation. It was, which is entitled "From Hope to Despair in Thessalonica, Situating 1st and 2nd Thessalonians." And there he argues that Paul's main purpose in writing these epistles is to reassure their election in the Lord, and because of that, their ground in their election in the Lord, they can have assurance that they're not going to suffer the day of the Lord's wrath. And in that whole thesis, Colin Nickel does some groundbreaking works on specific issues in Thessalonian scholarship. And one of these main issues is this new, refreshing, breakthrough type of scholarship on this issue of the restrainer, arguing that it's Michael, that the Apostle Paul has Michael in mind when he's talking about the restrainer. And so my purpose in this episode is to provide you, to give you, to kind of, basically to distill the lines of evidence that of Nickel's argumentation in his work, in his research, showing that Michael the archangel is the restrainer. So let's begin. Okay, so first of all, the meaning of the term restrainer, the Greek term is katecho, and the Greek word for it's used two times, katecho, in our passage, as they're used as participles functioning as a noun. Okay, I'm gonna get a little grammatical geeky on you guys here, but work through it, okay? In verse 6, it is in the neuter gender, okay, to katekon, right? What holds them back, that's how it's rendered. And then in verse 7, it's in the masculine gender, o katekon, and that's rendered the one who holds them back. In the New Testament, this word can mean prevent, hinder, restrain, hold fast, possess, confine, occupy. Okay, and in our specific context here, katecho means to restrain or hold back, because the man of lawlessness is kept in his unrevealed condition until the restrainer is removed. So only when the restrainer is removed can Satan be unfettered in working, in quote, working with all kinds of miracles and signs and false wonders, with every kind of evil deception. Okay, verses 9 through 10. So then Nickel says that, this is what Nickel says, he says, quote, "The restrainer's present activity functions both to hold back the rebel's revelation until the appointed time and to prevent the premature unleashing of Satan's full power and full deception." And this is why it's, end quote, this is why it's not a valid option to identify the restrainer as a, quote, evil person or a, quote, principle of evil, such as, you know, the Antichrist or Satan, because evil restraining evil, right? Or Satan restraining evil is just—it's simply unintelligible. And during Jesus' ministry, he actually addressed this absurdity of the idea of Satan being against Satan. You can read that in Matthew chapter 12, verses 24 to 26. Not to mention, there's no logical sense why Satan's removal of restraint would bring about the Antichrist revelation. Okay, let's get into this. So the Michael, let's first of all, we're going to look at the, you know, first of all, I addressed the meaning of restrainer, but now we're going to begin to look at some of these concrete lines of evidence. The first one is that Michael, in biblical Jewish thought, this is really important. People have not considered this when they examine this issue. Is what did the Jews believe back then? What was the, you know, how did they understand the relationship between a restrainer and Michael? Who was this restrainer, right? Well, Colin Nickel, he notes this failure among interpreters to give this accurate background for the restrainer in contemporary Judaism and Christianity back then. Which, of course, impedes them to accept an angelic hypothesis. So Colin Nickel, you know, he points out the selective evidence that interpreters have on this. Well, what he does is Nickel furnishes different roles that Michael the Archangel had that was conceived by Paul's contemporary Jewish and Christian background. Here are some of these roles. Now, think about this. This is how they perceived Michael. Okay, number one, usually the most important archangel. Number two, charged with the task of defending Israel. Three, interceding for Israel. Four, often regarded as a military angel. Five, archistrategos, commander. Having a significant eschatological role. Blowing an eschatological trumpet. The primary opponent of Satan, Belial, that is another name for the devil. He defeats Satan, or Belial, at the end. And then finally, will punish the fallen angels. Now think about all of these roles that Michael, I mean, that's the conception. That's a Jewish and Christian conception of how they perceive Michael. Okay, that's really important for the that's really important because it should inform, again, Paul was a Jew. Paul had these conceptions, all right, of Michael. His conception, theological conceptions, is not disconnected from the Jewish milieu of that time. So these characteristics, they show the preeminence of Michael in Jewish thought as being the opponent of Satan and the protector of God's people. So the question remains, asked Colin Nickel. He says, well, could the Apostle Paul in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 6 through 7, conceive Michael as a restrainer who would be removed before the revelation of the rebel, that is his term for the Antichrist? And Nickel answers in the affirmative. And he provides the following points of evidence, okay? First, as mentioned above, Paul's contemporary Jewish world viewed Michael with eschatological significance as the celestial protector of God's people and the primary opponent to the devil. Second, Michael's role as Israel's protector is seen in Daniel chapter 10, verses 12 through 14, and verse 21, and chapter 12, verse 1. And by the way, this last Danielic reference is situated at the midpoint of the 7-year period. Third, Michael's role as Israel's protector is attested in extra-biblical literature. 1 Enoch chapter 20, verse 5, Testament of Levi 5:6, and Testament of Dan 6:2. And what's noteworthy here is that Michael is seen as a restrainer within Judaism, not just in these texts, but also in, for example, magical papyrus using the term kaeko for Michael's restraining activity against the great dragon who is the devil. And all this primary literature, all these references to it, again, you can find it in his article as well. And again, I'll have all of these references in my forthcoming book. So fourth, it's the fourth one. Fourth, the book of Revelation portrays a heavenly war between Michael as commander of the heavenly army and the dragon and his angels. That's in Revelation chapter 12, verses 7 through 17. And incidentally, I'm not going to discuss this here, but I believe that we can know for several reasons that Satan is thrown down to earth at the midpoint. So that's interesting if that correlates with the midpoint. So Michael and his angels, they prevail, casting the dragon and his angels to the earth, who will deceive the world and persecute God's people. And in this passage, he's not seen as a restrainer per se, but his activity of casting the dragon to the earth results in that unprecedented persecution of God's people. And this is consistent with 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 6 through 7, and Daniel 11, 45 through chapter 12, verse 1, which shows, you know, that that once the restrainer is removed, Satan then possesses Antichrist, who will commit abominations and persecute God's people. So these four arguments, these particular cluster of four arguments, I'm going to give some more, they show a strong plausibility that Michael is the restrainer. What are they again? Michael's characteristics, the book of Daniel, the restrainer in extra-biblical literature, and the book of Revelation. What Colin Nicol does, he takes the evidence to a whole new level. In fact, he writes, he says, up to this point, however, no one has explained the most important point of 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 6 through 7, and that is the origin of the concept of Michael's removal. And then he says, moreover, the Danelic background, this is important, the Danelic, that is the book of Daniel's background, for the idea that Michael is a restrainer has never really been fully explored. And neither has a proponent of the Michael hypothesis offered a satisfactory explanation for the author's employment of the masculine and the neuter in reference to Michael. But this is what Colin Nicol does in his article. So let me describe these three questions that Nicol answers. First, we draw our attention to the Danelic background to Michael as a restrainer. The book of Daniel, of course, is important for our discussion because it's the principal source of the eschatological antagonists in early Christianity. I mean, I need to repeat that again. The book of Daniel, it's important for our discussion because even for Jesus in Matthew 24, not just for Paul, and not just for the book of Revelation, but for Paul as well. The book of Daniel is important for our discussion because it's the principal source of the eschatological antagonist, that i.e. Antichrist, in early Christianity. And Paul is dependent on Daniel in his teaching on the man of lawlessness, and not just the man of lawlessness, but the desecration of the temple. I mean, just look at Daniel chapter 9, verses 27, Daniel chapter 11, verses 36 to 37, and Daniel chapter 12, verse 11. Okay? So if that is the case, which it is, then we have to understand the vision of Daniel chapter 10 through chapter 12. Okay? Daniel chapter 10 through chapter 12 is the background to 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. It's the source, not just the background, it's the source that Paul is drawing from for the restrainer. Now, in this passage, Michael, in Daniel chapter 10, verses 1 through chapter 12, particularly verse 3, Michael restrains evil in the battlefronts of the spiritual and earthly, and in the earthly, okay? There's a great war, right? Spiritual, heavenly, earthly war. Just read that. Just read it. You'll see that. And this great war is with what happens in heaven. And well, Colin Nicol says, what happens in heaven determines what happens on earth. That's the thrust of those chapters. So Michael's role is to protect God's people by restraining the princesses of Persia and Greece and subsequent kingdoms. That's Michael's role, as a protector, a restrainer protector. Now, next, the next question is, what is the origin then of the concept of Michael's removal? Everything up to this point established Michael as a restrainer, both in the Bible and in extra-biblical literature. But the next question that Nicol asks is on the origin of the concept of his removal. Okay? Not just as a restrainer. You follow me? Not just as a restrainer. But what about, where's Paul drawing this concept of a removal of the restraining activity? In 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 4, Paul draws from Daniel 11, verse 36 through 37, for the future blasphemous Antichrist figure who desecrates the temple. We know that. So, accordingly, what we need to do then is we examine the context of Daniel chapter 11, verse 36 through chapter 12, verse 1. I mean, this is just good exegesis. This is what you do. This is the method of interpreting the Bible. So we examine that context of Daniel chapter 11, verse 36 through chapter 12, verse 1, and it informs us of the background to the removal of the restrainer in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 6 through 9. And Colin Nicol, he explains that Daniel chapter 11, verse 45, it alludes to the future time immediately preceding the final abomination of desolation. Quote, he will pitch his royal tents between the seas toward the beautiful holy mountain, but he will come to his end with no one to help him. That's Daniel chapter 9, verse, and the cross-reference is Daniel chapter 9, verse 27. And then chapter 12, verse 11. So Daniel ties, now follow this, Daniel is tying this event with the unequal tribulation in Daniel chapter 12, verse 1. And by the way, this is what Jesus connects this with, the abomination desolation in Mark 13 and Matthew 24. And Daniel chapter 12, verse 1, Michael is doing something. Now follow this. Michael is doing something that will result in the unprecedented tribulation for God's people. What is this? Let's read it. Daniel chapter 12, verse 1. At that time, Michael, the great prince who watches over your people, will arise, the Hebrew there, Amad. There will be a time of distress unlike any other from the nations beginning up to that time. But at that time, your own people, all those whose names are found written in the book, will escape. Now, Nicol, he gives a discussion of the meaning of this term, arise, and which in the Hebrew word here in tense, amad, It generally can mean to stand, but it also, it can mean the idea of standing still, that is stopping, cease moving, inactivity, cessation of an action, and then stand silent. Okay? And that's term amad. So, Nicol, he argues that the context here, obviously, how do we determine a word's meaning? Not disconnected from the context, but by the context. And if you look at the context naturally lends itself to one of these latter meanings, because this action, there's a cause and effect action. The action is immediately followed by the reference to what? Unequal distress upon the people Michael is protecting. Okay? So, cause-effect action. When Michael ceases his protecting restraint, i.e. he stands, stops activity, the people he has protected goes under its worst persecution. Daniel chapter 12, verse 1. This is where, if I could use the term smoking gun, this is where it is. And this is a major discovery of on this point on the whole restrainer issue. And it's hard to communicate. If you don't understand Septuagint studies, it's hard to appreciate this. Septuagint is the Greek translation of the Hebrew. This is what Paul would have been using and other New Testament writers. And Nickel is the first one who has actually discovered this. Okay, so we have the Hebrew meaning, right, Ahmad? And that in itself argues, in the context, argues that Michael is ceasing his restraining ministry. But the Greek is even more specific. And the Greek is very important because that's how the Jewish interpreters would have interpreted the Hebrew. And so they were even more specific in, not so much specific, that this is how they interpreted Michael's role in the Hebrew, and they rendered the term par erkome, in the Greek. Okay, that was a translation of the Hebrew, which means to disappear or pass away. So this corroboration of the Hebrew, and then you have the Greek Septuagint translation that's underlining the Hebrew, par erkome, which means typically in a figurative sense, again, to disappear or pass away. It's hard to, sometimes it's hard to explain the significance of this if you don't appreciate, again, how when one studies the Old Testament, you don't just study the Hebrew, you study the Greek, because the Greek in many times informs us of how they would have understand if there was ambiguity in the Hebrew, but there's not really a whole lot of ambiguity, I don't believe, in the Hebrew. What the Greek often does, it can confirm or be more gives more specificity. And in this case, it definitely does, because it shows that what Michael is doing is that he is stopping his restraint by the Greek rendering, or the choice of the Greek word, the interpreters, the Septuagint translators, that is, they interpreted the Hebrew in that sense, and thereby they translated it by par erkomai. In fact, the new English translation of the Septuagint, probably the most noted English translation of the Septuagint, renders it as, here's a translation of the verse. It says, "And at that hour, Michael, the great angel who stands over the sons of your people, will pass by." Okay, so that's kind of a metaphoric or figurative way of saying, hey, he's no longer standing over you. He's not protecting you anymore, in other words. And then it says, "That is the day of affliction, which will be such as has not occurred since they were born until that day. And on that day, the whole people will be exalted, whoever is found inscribed in the book." And that is, again, the New English translation of the Septuagint. So this Greek rendering of the Hebrew, again, it's most fitting in light of the result from Michael's actions. Quote, "time of distress, unlike any other from the nations beginning up to that time." And the Septuagint is demonstrating the Jewish interpretation of the Hebrew viewed, which views Michael as, again, stopping his restraint. In addition, it needs to be noted that the renowned Jewish scholar, Rashi, the most renowned Jewish scholar, Rashi, understood this term in Daniel chapter 12, verse 1, as he rendered it, as well as "he shall stand," that Michael shall stand. In other words, i.e. stopping that ceasing activity. Another point, contemporary Jewish interpreters of that day understood this text to refer to Michael's withdrawal. Quote, withdrawal. For example, there's an important manuscript, 233. A reviser of the Septuagint rendered the Hebrew by the term anakoreo. Anakoreo, which means to go away, withdraw, retire. Another, just more evidence of this rabbinic tradition is that later not just the early Jewish interpreters, but later interpreters as well, understood this term to refer to Michael stopping his restraining ministry. I'm sorry, these are what I mean by later in Jewish interpreters, not compared to Rashi. Obviously, Rashi was later, but I'm talking about later Jewish interpreters subsequent to the writing of the book of Daniel. You have other interpreters that understand Michael stopping his restraining ministry in this text. You have the poem of Ruth Rabbaz is attributing to the rabbis Yohanan, and Yohanan flourished around mid-third century, and Hanina flourished around the late second century. And they, as well, are consistent in interpreting Michael's activity here in Daniel as ceasing of his ministry. Let's take a step back, and let me just outline all of these lines of evidence. And notice, it's not just, you know, one little line of evidence over here, and then, you know, it's making a case out of one little, you know, point over here. No, there are multiple lines of evidence. And if you're a good exegete, you're going to look at that and say, that is, that is plausible. And you can have degrees of certainty. And when you have these multiple lines of evidence and the other candidates don't have these, well, obviously the reasonable conclusion is that, X candidate fulfills this role most likely, and, you know, Y and Z candidates do not. So anyway, so let me summarize these lines of evidence. Number one, contemporary Jewish literature viewed the characteristics of Michael having eschatological preeminence as the chief opponent of Satan and restrainer of God's people. Number two, Michael is viewed as a celestial restrainer of God's people in Daniel chapters 10 through 12, the passage that serves as the very source for Paul's exposition in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 3 through 8. Number three, Daniel's use of the Hebrew term Amad comports with the activity of the restrainer in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 6 through 7. Number four, the Greek term parerkome in Daniel chapter 12, verse 1 of the Septuagint means to pass by, which corresponds with the ceasing of restraint in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 6 through 7. Number five, early rabbinic interpretation of Daniel chapter 12, verse 1, perceived Michael as, quote, passing aside or, quote, withdrawing just after Antichrist's establishment near or at the Temple Mount in Daniel 11:45, and just before the eschatological unequal tribulation against God's people, Daniel chapter 12, verse 11. And then finally, point number six, Revelation chapter 12, verses 7 through 17 supports viewing Michael as a restrainer because it links the cessation of Michael's war against the dragon with the unprecedented persecution of God's people, which is consistent with 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 6 through 7, and Daniel chapter 11, verses 45 to chapter 12, verse 1. And Nickel points out that Michael, given all these reasons, Michael is the only candidate which can explain the restrainer is removed and must be removed. And all these other proposals for the restrainer, Holy Spirit, the gospel, government, they're hard-pressed to comport with these roles that Michael fulfills. So the reasons given here in this episode, I believe, provide a strong case that the Apostle Paul in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 6 through 7, refers to Michael the archangel as the restrainer, whose ministry ceases and causes the eschatological temple to be desolated by Antichrist, which is, of course, ensued by his great tribulation against God's people. Okay, before I close this program out, I do want to note just one more point that Colin Nickel makes, and this refers to the, how do you explain the masculine and the neuter in reference to Michael, right? Okay, so just quickly here, and we'll close up. So Nickel concludes his argumentation by responding to an objection as it relates to the neuter of the Greek word kataeko. As noted earlier, the term is used two times in the Thessalonian passage as a participle functioning as a noun. In verse 6, it is the neuter gender, to katekon, what holds him back. And in verse 7, it is a masculine gender, o katekon, the one who holds him back. And some interpreters argue that since verse 6, since it is in the neuter, to katekon, what holds him back, and Michael is a male, not neuter, therefore he cannot be the restrainer. Nickel responds. He says, he shows that this objection, it does not carry any real weight. And he says it could be replied, Nickel says, it could be replied to understand the masculine in verse 7 to refer to Michael, and the neuter in verse 6 to refer to the, quote, the will of God, or the, quote, the army of God or heaven. But Nickel doesn't think that this interpretation is probable because it's unnatural, and the proximity of the masculine and neuter of the same subject, he says, is more fitting for a single entity. So Nickel responds, he thinks that instead the best explanation here is, he argues that it's, you have to recognize that the Greek can use the neuter gender to refer to a person while the emphasis is on an exceptional quality of the individual. That is, yeah, a quality of it, of the individual. And this is not unusual because you have examples of this in the New Testament. And I'll just point some of these out real quick. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 5, 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 27 to 28, Galatians 3, 22, John 3, 6, John 17, 24, 1 John 5, 1 through 4, Matthew 12, verse 6. These are examples that demonstrate that. So the neuter in verse 6, in other words, would refer to Michael with a focus on his ministry, his restraining ministry, while the masculine in verse 7 refers to Michael himself. So this objection just does not hold weight. Okay. Well, in conclusion of this episode, I believe all these reasons strongly argue that in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, that the Apostle Paul sees Michael, has Michael in mind as the restrainer. And as I mentioned in the first part, or the first previous episode, I'm going to have an entire chapter devoted to this issue in my forthcoming book on refuting pre-trib objections. The title of the book has not been finalized, but you can expect it to come out around roughly around September or October. So.